From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. 3 years ago, I received an email from a listener that was so moving, so haunting, it stayed with me ever since. John Whitmer had heard my series of conversations on women at war and the debate over whether women are in fact serving in combat roles. He wrote this.
Thanks for your series on women in combat. My daughter, Specialist Michelle Whitmer of the 32nd MP Company, was killed in action in Baghdad in the early morning hours of April 10, 2004. At the time, she was in the gunner turret of her Humvee, manning a SAW, a machine gun capable of firing 750 rounds per minute. She and her squad were convoying to a police station that had been the target of insurgent attacks. Their mission was to protect the station. On the way, they drove into an intense three-block-long ambush. As Michelle positioned the gun to return fire, she was hit in the shoulder. The trajectory of the bullet caused it to pass through her heart. Does any of this sound like a support role to you?
Michelle Whitmer was the first female member of the National Guard killed in combat. Now, 6 years after his daughter's death, John Whitmer has written a book about her service and that of his other two daughters, Rachel and Charity, who also served in Iraq. The book is called Sisters in Arms, A Father Remembers. I asked John Whitmer how he was able to piece together what happened to his daughter.
Part of it initially was the letter that one of the soldiers that was with her that night sent us. He talked through it, the events of the night, and basically told us how she died. And then later on, and it was many years later before I could face this, I did request the reports that were filed that night. It took several years to get them, but eventually I got them, and I read through the reports and just kind of corroborated what everybody had told us as far as what she was up to and what she was doing. And here's the other interesting thing. There were three vehicles in that convoy that she was in. All three vehicles had females in the gunner turret.
You said you went and you read through the reports. Did you have to go someplace special, sit in a room all alone with that document on your lap?
I remember actually taking a chair and going into a very small office and closing the door. And just, I didn't tell my wife that I actually got them. It was days before I could tell her that they actually came in the mail. I had to read them myself before I would decide if I would tell her. And to this day, she's never read them, and I don't want her to. But it was something I felt I needed to do. And it was very hard.
In the book, you go back and revisit some very, very difficult moments. You write with great candor about the hours and really the minutes after you first got the terrible news about your daughter, Michelle. Your first instinct was to get your other daughters back home.
Absolutely. I think any parent in the same situation, I believe, would feel the same way. You just had this tremendous loss. A part of you has been torn out. Later, people would accuse us of being unpatriotic. At the time, it didn't even go that deep. It was just I had to protect my daughters. And I think, you know, later on you understand, if you've read through, that I had to come to grips with the fact that it wasn't my decision, that my daughters had to make that decision. And as much as my instincts were to protect them, they were grown up now. They were soldiers.
You were seeking a compassionate reassignment, and your daughters didn't necessarily think that was a good idea?
They didn't know. They just wanted time to think about it. In the end, the decision was taken out of their hands in some respects, because all the publicity around the request created an atmosphere where we felt that, and the National Guard felt, that they might actually bring danger to their fellow soldiers because they were so high profile. We'd actually gotten death threats, people identifying themselves as part of the insurgency, saying that if they saw them again, that they would make them a target.
Mm. When your daughters first joined the military, what was your knowledge of what women might possibly be doing, and then how did that square with what you ultimately learned by going back and examining what they actually did in Baghdad?
Well, first of all, they were reservists. So I always thought reservists filled in behind the regular army as they were deployed. And then I thought, as far as females, they would always be in some type of support role. And like I said in the book, I imagined them sitting at some supply depot signing trucks in and out. Then I began getting emails from them in Baghdad and began understanding that they're convoying through cities, they're going on raids, they're defending police stations. You know, it was quite a shock. And I think it wasn't until I began to get those first letters home from Baghdad that it sunk in, that that's what female soldiers do nowadays. It should have registered when I went to their basic training graduation, and And they explained that they had all the same training as their male counterparts, same weapons training, same physical training. They were prepared to do what they did.
You suggest that the country should reconsider what it means to have women in combat. What specifically should be reevaluated?
I don't know if reconsidered is quite the word I'm looking for. I think what we need to do is own up to the fact of what our female soldiers are doing and fully respect it. I am not one who says that women don't belong in combat. My daughters were full-grown women who made choices and decided that this is the way they wanted to serve. And again, some people would argue that they weren't in combat. And this is where it gets all dicey and I get a little frustrated. You know, when you're in a war that doesn't have a front line, all those old rules go out the window. And I guess when we say reconsider, that's what I want people to reconsider. There aren't any front lines in many of these wars that we're engaging in today. So the rules that seem to be segregating what men's roles are and what women's roles are, they don't apply anymore. So let's own up to that and let's acknowledge what our female soldiers are doing and let's respect it.
What don't people understand about what you go through, particularly as time goes on?
Well, I think the first thing they don't understand is what it's like for a family to wait. We were in the support group for the 32nd MPs, and I'll tell you the stories that you hear of people trying to cope, you know, moms with three kids whose husband, who had a good job, is now over making military pay and trying to keep the business that he ran together while taking care of the household. We don't understand the sacrifices as a country of what our families go through. That's number one. Number two is when we do lose a soldier, if I can get just one person to understand what that statistic means when it's read over the news or it's reported in the newspaper, I feel like in some way I've done what I want to do. Because I think when you fully appreciate the cost of war, then you go to war more carefully. I want people to understand what the true cost is, and I want them to make sure that we spend the lives of our soldiers very, very carefully.
John Whitmer, thank you very much for talking to us. All the best to you and all the best to your family.
Thank you.
John Whitmer, his book is called Sisters in Arms, A Father Remembers.